Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Sup, it's Griffin McElroy.
This is wonderful.
It's a grand old flag. She's a high-flying flag, and forever the flag is a flag. Except when the flag's not a flag, it is swim shorts, and you wear them at the beach.
I love that song.
Turn into a funeral dirge there at the end. For the American flag swimmy shorts, a bold look, but a patriotic look nonetheless, and thank you. For, you know, repping the set when you're out in the sand.
Like a little bandana.
A
little flag bandana.
Oh, you know I love an American flag bandana. Mm-hmm. At like a fucking blues concert at a regatta or something down by the river. That's my shit right there. Like 55-year-old dad wearing a American flag bandana and maybe even also a Big Dog t-shirt if I could be so bold.
Nice.
And they're just jamming to like the local
sleeves
blues.
Cut off.
Sleeves are gone. The sleeves, they got this shit out of the bag from the Big Dog store, and they like went to the cashier and were like, do you have scissors? Because I can't even leave the store with these fucking sleeves. Put those on, American flag bandana, and then they go and they listen to the local blues musicians play at the regatta.
Can I ask you how many regattas you've been to?
One a year for every year I lived in Huntington.
Tell me about that.
It's by the riverfront, and I guess it's just kind of like a fair.
I always thought regattas had to do with like sailing. Or boat craft.
Yeah, there were boats because it was on the river, the mighty Ohio. And we would look at the boats, wouldn't go on the boats. One time I went on a barge cruise when I was 15 or so, but mostly it was just sort of sitting by the river watching boats go by and watching this guy, this motherfucker, like extra from Storage Wars ass looking dude with his American flag bandana and sleeveless Big Dog shirt. And just losing it to the blues that was happening.
That's
on
great.
Stage. Yeah.
Those guys are like perpetually tan year round. I don't know how
they're always quite tan. and I love that. Maybe it helps them win the storage unit bidding wars a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But anyway, wow, we watched a lot of Storage Wars really, really fast a long time
this
ago.
Was years ago.
And then we never watched
it. I can't watch it at all now. What is that?
We watched it almost every day.
I feel like we got Travis into it for a while.
We got a lot of people into it, and we watched it a lot. And then it was like, and done. It was like there's a part of our brains that was syncopated that was like 76 episodes and then all that you need. It's like we'd filled a quotient or something inside a quota even. So I wonder if we talk about things we're really into.
It's true.
Do you have a small wonder that maybe you're just kind of into?
I do. It is the new Imitation Down Comforter that we got.
I was also going to say this Imitation Down Comforter. Full disclosure, full disc. Haven't gotten underneath this big boy yet.
Just looks nice on the bed.
It just looks real nice on the bed. And we're talking about an hour that it's been in our home, and it's already sort of...
It's the best thing to happen to us.
And it's very, very exciting. American Ninja Warrior, many thanks for that, NBC.
Griffin and I realized today for the first time
that
we are, in fact, super fans because we have seen approximately every episode.
I mean, you see Najee Richardson step up to the plate.
Excited.
I get very excited when I see the Phoenix Rising, Najee Richardson.
I guess in my head, I always assumed that super fans of American Ninja Warriors were, in fact, people training to be Ninja Warriors themselves.
But then
I thought about the fact that we've seen every episode and that we eagerly watch it every time we get a chance. And then I thought, well, that's pretty much what being a fan is.
That's what being a fan means. Two things. One, it's very possible we are the world's biggest fans of American Ninja Warrior, and I have not even begun to grapple with that.
We also do talk a lot about what our ninja names would be.
Yeah. I would probably be like the Unlikely Ninja, if I'm being honest. I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
Vis-a-vis A&W. Since we've watched so much of it, have you ever pondered for, I'll say longer than 10 seconds, what direction your life would have to go like to get you on the fucking show, if it would even be possible?
Well, usually when they do the video package, a lot of people have like a turning point in their life that motivates them to get fit and train for Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
I guess that turning point for me would be if I mean, something terrible.
Yeah, like a meteorite. Well, sometimes it doesn't always have to be that. Like, there's definitely people who are, like, crushing that shit who, like, mm-hmm. have not gone through a meteorite falling on their house or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be me.
Maybe if my husband...
Yes?
...bet me that I couldn't do it.
There it is. I love that. And you know what I love the most about that? Is yeah. that it sort of very publicly and on a national televised scale shows me being sort of a big dill weed who's like, you can't, my wife can't do anything.
So you're sitting on the couch with your arms crossed, shaking your
head. Yeah, and I'd be at like the sidelines as you were like on the floating steps, like, no way. That's great for me. Like, I love that for me and like my image.
What about you?
I would just fucking do it. I would probably do a podcast about it. Like, yeah, Griffin's like rise, like
the Griffin's Ninja Corner.
Yeah, like climbing Mount Midoriyama, and it's just like my start from right now. Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening to the pilot episode of Climbing Mount Midoriyama featuring Griffin McElroy and Rachel McElroy. And it's me right now, and I can't do any of the things.
I came up with a name for your podcast.
Okay.
Mount Midoriyama gonna be on Ninja Warrior.
Oh, yes. I think within 3 weeks I could do the floating steps. And that's the first obstacle every time.
Ooh.
This is for nobody what we're doing right now, and you're up first.
Okay.
That was 10 minutes. Shit.
We are super fans.
Yeah, I guess.
Turns out. My first thing, and maybe one of the reasons I'm not going to be on Ninja Warrior.
Uh-oh.
Hammocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Super chill. Like laying still. And then having something else swing me.
I don't want to come at you right from the start. But we definitely had a hammock at our old house.
Well, the thing is, it's always 102 degrees in Texas.
That is true. And that thing always had a bird poop on it. Like, the frequency with which birds would take a big old dump right on the hammock was as such that while you were cleaning off the previous poops, three or four more would just appear.
I definitely did go out in that hammock several times. But as soon as it hit, like, I don't know, June, that was the end of the hammock.
Yeah, for sure.
So, hammocks have a rich history, if you can believe it.
Sure. I do.
But I did still find some surprising facts.
Uh-oh. Did you know the
I'm
hammock?
Trying out a new character for the show.
Did you know the hammock is a bigot? No, the hammock. I loved the hammock.
Hammocks were developed by native inhabitants of Central and South America for, hey, sleeping.
Yeah, buy it.
Later they were used aboard ships by sailors to enable comfort and maximize available space.
And then you just need some fucking rope for that, and then they all got all kinds of that for the sails and what have you.
Early hammocks were woven out of tree bark, and later this material was replaced by sisal fibers because it was more abundant.
Yeah, it probably seems like an upgrade from sleeping in tree bark.
Apparently they were called hammocks because the woven bark came from the, hammock tree.
Huh.
H-A-M-A-C-K.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is this a, so they just like, can I raise a hand and ask maybe a silly question?
I probably will not have the answer, so go ahead.
Does it just grow out of them?
Does like what?
You plant a hammock in the ground.
Uh-huh.
And then this tree comes up.
That's a neat thought.
And like, it takes a long time, like 5 years. But
what a great imagination you have.
Yeah, then like, you just hammocks come out.
Like multiple hammocks?
Yeah, I mean, you'd want a good yield. You can't just fucking plant one hammock and get one hammock back. Where are all the fucking hammocks coming from?
Another reason hammocks were popular in Central and South America was the ability to provide safety from disease transmission, insect stings, or animal bites, since the beds were suspended above ground.
For the ground insects, there's a lot of nasty boys that can get up there with their wings and stuff.
Here's a fun fact, though.
I'm learning so many fun facts from you about hammocks right now.
I didn't just go to Wikipedia. I went to multiple websites, and every site listed this with no additional detail. So I want you to help me think about this. In the 1920s, parents throughout North America used fabric hammocks to contain babies just learning to crawl.
I think that's true.
So when your kids started to become mobile, mm-hmm. and you were like, uh-oh, I got to keep an eye on you, they would dump them in a hammock?
Yeah. Listen, it was the 1920s, man. We couldn't drink. And so, like, folks had to have some form of excitement. And I guess for them back then, and I don't condone it, but I think they just turned their kids into, like, a little Metapod.
A little what?
A Metapod is a Pokemon. He's, like, in a cocoon.
Okay. I just think kids that are just learning to crawl have difficulty balancing, and then to put them into something that is unstable ground that can rock back and forth seems like a lot of kids would really struggle in that.
Yeah, for sure. But again, like, in the 1920s,
just like a pen on the ground.
Yeah,
like some kind of play pen, perhaps.
I think in like 1936, somebody was like, "Ah, oh, we should do what the fuck are we doing? Let's put them in a pen."
Because if they fall out of the hammock, that's
quite bad. It ain't good. One time, I saw my brother Travis fall out of a hammock while we were camping. And it wasn't like super far down, right? But he was not so big a boy. He was 9, and he was not the biggest 9-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I thought for sure he's dead, like 100%. Like he fell good. Like he fell bad. It was a bad fall.
Did you guys ever do the thing with the woven hammock where you spin somebody around and wrap them up like a burrito?
No, that sounds incredibly dangerous. Are you kidding me? Am I Johnny Knoxville from Jackass?
We used to have one of those like fishnet style hammocks. And you would get kind of wrapped up in it, and you'd spin.
Oh, gosh. I'd be afraid that it'd wrap up too tight and I'd get, like, gushed. Like, I'm in a late-era Jason movie.
I like a Capri Sun being squeezed.
Oh, babe, don't even joke about that. I'll never get another hammock for as long as I live.
So I love a hammock. I have yet to find a way to use them here in Texas that is satisfactory, because it is not pleasant to be outside a lot of the like primo hammock. But in the fall, oh man, the fall.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I feel genuinely bad about how little we go outside. But it's either hot or mosquitoes.
Yeah, gosh, the mosquitoes are bad.
The mosquitoes are so bad. I went out in the garage to install a new baby car seat in our car, and I came back with like 8 mosquito bites on my ankle. It was rough, and I wasn't out there that long, and just the mosquitoes are real bad down here. Is there a place where there's no mosquitoes? Probably like Antarctica, but they have, you know.
Does the desert have mosquitoes?
The desert,
like humidity is usually what brings them.
Yeah, probably around like an oasis, there's like a fuck ton of mosquitoes who like have nowhere else to go. Antarctica would be good if it wasn't for sea lions. Hate those guys. Do you want to know my first thing?
Yes.
My first thing is chill swimming. Chill swimming. I'm not talking about the cold water, the like chilly, like Barton Springs, 70 degrees.
Are you talking about swimming that's not really swimming?
I'm talking about just like kind of, I guess, being in the water, being in a pool. Maybe I should just change it to being in a pool. Because here's the thing. I'm a very poor swimmer. Not good. You've seen me, actually. Give me a numerical rating, you think, between 1 and 10. How good am I at the swim?
What is 10?
10's, you know.
Like Olympic or like?
Olympic. No, 10 is like confident, good swimmer.
Like you see that person and you think, there you know how to swim.
Yes, they're quite talented in the pool.
I would say you're a 6.
All right. That's higher than I deserve. I want to be specific. I'm not talking about swimming as a form of exercise, although I do think that it is great for that, especially for people for whom like weight-bearing exercise is not possible. And I'm not talking about it as a means of moving from one place to the other. Like, so many better ways to do that, in my opinion. If it must be on water, like, hello, boats, jet skis.
We should start a podcast called Hello, Boats, and you can talk about all your regatta experience, too.
Yeah, so maybe we can do, like, a nerds double pack where we do Hello, Boats and Mount Midoriyama going to be on American Ninja Warrior in the same sort of show. So the first 30 minutes can be sort of regatta-focused, and then the last 30 minutes can be, like,
it's
well,
a very narrow audience bracket we've created.
I think it's, like, this podcast's audience minus 2/3. And that's me being very, like, generous. I meant to say, swimming, just chill swimming, it feels so good. And I guess I can specify that in two ways. One, We do live in Texas where it is, no joke, like over 100 degrees 4 months out of the year, would you say? Like middle of May to middle of September, probably. Yeah, it's like over 100 degrees. I'm not being hyperbolic. The first year I moved here, we had over 100 days in a row of over 100 degree temperatures. It's quite hot. And getting really hot and then getting in a cold body of water, specifically a pool, is the fucking best. Similarly, being in a cold pool and then lowering your body temperature, getting it all, you know, chilled out and getting used to the coldness of the water and then getting off and letting the heat dry you off is also really good.
Griffin was so adorable when we went swimming over the weekend because we got out and we were in the shade and he was so confused by the sensation of his wet body in the hot, what was supposed to be hot temperature. He turned to me and he was like, "Is it cold out?" You're just wet and it's windy.
I was rolling on Molly pretty good also, but I just like that feeling, not when we're in the shade, but when you're just like in the hot heat. And you know that if you didn't just get out of the cold pool, you'd be like miserable right now, but it's kind of nice right now. You feel like a blanket that just like got pulled out of the dryer. I enjoy that a lot. I used to not enjoy cold water because like getting into it is, you know, kind of a shock sometimes. I don't want to get blue, but like on my junk and my butt, like...
Your butt? What happens to your butt?
You know, when you get your butthole in the water. Are you kidding? Like when your butthole gets in the water, it's not like bracing? Babe. I can't tell which one of the two of us is joking right now.
I've never gotten into the water and thought about the way my butt feels as a result,
guess. Not your butt, but just your butthole.
I don't want to say that, I don't think. Please continue.
I used to like a nice body temperature pool because then you could just like get in and get out, whatever. No big deal. But now I really like this sensation, this bracing sensation of, you know, getting in on a hot day and then getting out and warming up. It also helps when you're drinking a nice cold beverage while you're swimming in the swimming pool, not at like a public park or something like that. But you get, you know, cooled off on the inside and the outside. You're just like sort of messing with your thermostat a little bit. And I find that very enjoyable, even though I don't necessarily do laps or stunts or flips or dives. Can't dive. Never learned how. Very afraid.
So chill swimming is just being in water.
Yeah, I guess. Just sort of being in a nice pool. But there's another thing, and it's not just the temperature of it. It's the like feeling of weightlessness of being in a pool is very, very, very cool. And it's great not only because like it does allow it to be used as a form of like physical therapy for those that need that. There's something just kind of fascinating about being able to keep your body up off the ground, David Blaine style. Do you know what I mean? Just like being in the water, I enjoy the sensation of being in a pool and my feet aren't touching anything. And it's kind of like I'm hovering a little bit. Like, you never just, like, float on your back and just kind of, like, chill there. And it's like, this is nice.
You'd always talk to me about how you don't think you're especially good at floating.
I'm not especially good at floating. And maybe that's why I enjoy it more than the average person is because those few precious seconds before my body's complete sort of density, let's say, drags me down, way down to the bottom of the pool as if I'm being pulled down by an imaginary, like, invisible monster, like that one very scary episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark? I just really love it. I love the floating on it. I remember very vividly, there was a time where we went to visit our aunt and uncle's house in Florida, and I just popped in a snork and just floated face down in the pool for like a half hour, which I'm saying this out loud, and I'm thinking like, where was the parenting? Where was the parenting?
They were just so relieved that you'd found a way to keep yourself busy that wasn't video games.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, I imagine my Uncle Dave was like, wow, he's really floating there. And my dad was like, it's kind of athletic, I guess. It's kind of outdoors. Let's just let him go. That was the same trip where moments later we were leaving and I saw that my uncle had I've definitely talked about this on some podcast before, but he had a golf cart and I yelled Grand Theft Auto because Grand Theft Auto, the video game was very hot then. And yes. I ran forward and I barreled through his screen door and he got really upset.
You have definitely told the story.
It's all connected. The whole universe, you know?
Somebody right now is piecing together their Griffin index cards.
I really do love, I'm getting better at floating on my back doing that with your ears under the water so you can't like hear anything.
Ooh,
and you're just
like,
shut.
Like that.
Oh, but you got bad. You got the bad ears.
I got the bad ears.
Well, I got the good ears. So let me enjoy my thing.
Okay.
I'm very sorry about your bad ears because this sensation is quite good.
When I say I have bad ears, I get swimmer's ear pretty much any time my head is submerged in water.
It's a real shame.
Mm-hmm. I got real narrow canals.
I'll say. Jesus Christ. Should I leave that in?
I mean, I think it's important people know who you are.
I also really like when you're by the edge of the pool and you can like dive under and like push yourself off and like fly through the water, see how far you can go without moving your arms, like Superman style. That's still technically not swimming because I'm not actually paddling my arms and kicking my legs. I'm just kind of torpedoing. I do that one a lot. And I like it because it feels weird. It feels weird to be weightless. And
sometimes
and
just, I feel like I'm doing this podcast with a 10-year-old.
But I feel like a 10-year-old sometimes because of the way you make me feel while doing this podcast. I just like these. I like these. I agree. It's a simple sensation. One time I did the moon on this podcast and my thesis there was, aren't waves neat? But I just like, I had this thought recently. We went swimming, not this most recent time, because we just went in the baby pool, which yeah. It's you can't do any of this
stuff.
I had
a great time.
You had a great time because our son likes being around you in the pool. He looks at me as if I'm some sort of Leviathan come up from the deep to destroy his whaling boat or something. Anyway, I don't want to undersell the great active stuff you can do in the pool. I'm talking about jumps. I'm talking about flops. I'm talking about flips, dives.
What about those somersaults people do underwater? Can you do that?
Yes.
Whew,
okay. Don't want to brag, but I can do that and I can do a handstand. So, but for me, I just like chilling. Just like chilling in the water.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever like throw stuff in the pool and go swimming after it?
Once. I think we threw like 5 little rings in like a hotel pool.
Yeah.
And I got like 2 of them and I was like, this was not a good investment, Clint. You just lost 3 rings, dog. Hope these weren't expensive. Can I steal you away? Oh, I got it. It's not a fast food soda.
This message is for Dylan Z.
Nice.
What?
That's just cool.
Okay. It's from Claire I.
Badass.
Hey, Dill.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I really busted a nut up in this birthday gift.
Oh, yes.
You do such wonderful things in my life every day.
A nice turn into the sincere.
Your sweet butt.
Oh, shit.
Gets me to Nirvana.
Oh, my God. Yes. Hands in the air.
I'm so happy we finally live in the same state.
Okay.
Close it All up. I have to do to see that choice tush in person is send you a telepathic message. I'll never stop loving you, baby. Happy birthday. Claire.
That was a fucking tight message. Are you kidding me with all the
say a lot of words there.
Yeah, you did. Hell yes.
That was difficult for me.
That was so dope for me.
But happy birthday, Dill.
Happy birthday, Dill, no matter what. And great work on that keister.
This
that sweet quiche. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This next message is for Elena. It is from Henry. Elena, thank you for introducing me to Mabim Bam and Taz. I love you so much. Will you marry me?
What? What?
The preferred time for this message to air was March.
Oh, fuck.
But
Rachel, what do we do?
Hope they weren't waiting on that.
Rachel.
I'm going to assume this already happened. They had another vehicle, perhaps.
I hope they had a backup. Oh, damn. Babe, what do we do?
I mean, I think we just did it.
We got to make this right.
I think we've done all we can.
No, we got to make this right. We gotta plan every step of their wedding.
Okay. Do you want hammocks at your wedding?
They said no.
You tapped in?
Yeah, I did. I got them on. You can't hear it because I got the headphones on, but I got them on Skype, and they said no, strictly no hammocks. So
now I know, as a Max Fun listener, you love enamel pins, but guess who were the first people to wear enamel pins? Everyone in Starfleet.
We talk about him every week on our show, The Greatest Generation.
It's originally about Star Trek The Next Generation, now we're covering Deep Space Nine.
The main thing we're trying to encourage you to do is listen to the show.
Listen to the show and know that you are expanding the community of enamel pin-wearing enthusiasts.
You can only resist Big Pin for so long, so give yourself over to Big Pin and The Greatest Generation by subscribing and downloading right now.
The Greatest Generation at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
How about your second thing?
Okay, my second thing is very specific, but I think it will be useful and helpful to many. It is volunteering at festivals.
Okay.
So I have seen a lot of great performances for free, and I have done so because I have volunteered at festivals.
Okay. This is very specific.
It's very specific, but I think it's not something a lot of people know about.
Sure.
So I actually figured this out because I used to coordinate volunteers for festivals when I was in Chicago.
Oh, I didn't know that I knew that you've done it at ACL here in town. I did not know that this habit of yours extended all the way back to Chicago.
Yeah. Well, I ran the volunteer program for two different festivals.
Holy shit.
I thought, I guess you don't know this. So when I moved to Chicago, I started coordinating volunteers for Louder Than a Bomb, the Chicago Teen Poetry Festival.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yes.
So they would have hundreds of volunteers sign up and we would have them do a variety of things like greet people at the door or, you know, help take tickets, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And that connected me to somebody who was starting a music festival in Chicago called Intonation Music Festival. And this was before Pitchfork. And it was just like a little indie music festival. And so I coordinated volunteers for that. And all that gave me the idea of like, I should start volunteering at festivals because you get to see the shows for free.
Right.
You volunteer and you get a sweet t-shirt.
I mean, you do have to work.
You do. Well, so I'll get to that.
Sure.
So I started volunteering at Lollapalooza in Chicago in 2005. And I did it every summer for 3 or 4 years. And what you do is you sign up in like May, if the festival's in like August, let's say. And you work traditionally like a 4-hour shift. So you're either handing out programs, or you're sitting at the information booth, or you're filling people's water bottles. And then when your shift is over, you get to stay the rest of the day for free.
Hmm.
So I got to see a lot of cool shows. It's like the first time I got to see Flaming Lips.
Fuck yeah. Did you see the Peppers?
Yes.
I was joking. You saw the reddest, hottest, chilliest Peppers?
All of the Peppers were there.
Shit.
I saw Weezer.
Nice. Original lineup or the new guys?
I mean, I don't know. I saw Radiohead.
Oh, cool.
Just a lot of cool bands.
Original.
Okay. And so I did that in Lollapalooza for a few years. When I moved to Austin, I did Fun 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 Fest for a year. I did South by Southwest 1 year. And I did ACL Fest for like 3 or 4 years. And the more you do it, the more preferential treatment you get as far as when you volunteer.
Yeah.
So you can volunteer in the morning, for example, and then you get the whole afternoon and evening to see shows for free.
I did not realize this is a thing you've done like a dozen times.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, my whole like pajama drawer is full of festival t-shirts. I had to actually put them in a Tupperware because they were overtaking my thing. I've also done it. I did it for a film festival in Chicago once. I did it for a blues fest in Columbia, Missouri. I really kind of got into it for a while there because, as you all know, festival tickets are incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And I never really could justify paying that much. But, when you volunteer, you get a little wristband, you hang out for the rest of the day, see a lot of good shows. And I talked a lot of our friends into doing it too. So yeah, I would recommend it. A few months before, usually after tickets are on sale, so you kind of have to gamble a little bit that you're going to get a volunteer spot. But they'll post a call for volunteers because they need hundreds of them.
Sure.
And you sign up and then you get to take in the whole experience for usually like a registration fee to volunteer, which is like $20 sometimes. And that's just to cover their costs for screening all the applications and stuff.
If I had lived in a town that had music festivals frequently, or gone to college, I should say, in like a town that had like music festivals frequently, I would have been doing this shit all the time because I had no money and I was obsessed with the idea of going to music festivals.
Well, and here's a Here's a secret, and I am not advising this. But let's say you don't live in Chicago, for example, but you have a friend that does.
Oh.
You could list their address, because a lot of times they'll restrict volunteering to locals.
Interesting.
But if you have a buddy that lives in Chicago, you list their address, you show up, you're good to go.
What's the best music festival you ever went to, like shows-wise, experience-wise, like year? Geez-o. What was the best? What was the best, maybe like specifically best show you ever saw at a music festival you volunteered for that you didn't pay any money for?
Oh my gosh. Man, so I've seen like LCD Sound System and Arcade Fire and Florence and the Machine and Stevie Wonder.
All in the same set? That's fucking tight. That would be a dope super group.
No, it's just, it's hard for me to pick.
Mine's LCD Sound System at Pitchfork the year I went to that. That was
well, and here's the thing, though. Like, I did a lot of that by myself.
Yeah.
So
you didn't have Jeremy Larson there next to you there, and you just had your fucking arms around each other, just jumping up and down to fucking All My Friends, just weeping, crying, like just letting the music energize you and fill you with emotion.
No, that wasn't me.
You're just there alone, I guess.
But I have had a lot of very good experiences.
I wish we'd go to, we've been to one music festival together. We went to ACL 1 year.
And we did South by Southwest.
We did South by Southwest. That's true. That's where we met, I guess. Yes. Mm-hmm. I wish you'd come to Bonnaroo with me, though. I wish you could.
I don't think I would have liked Bonnaroo.
I don't think you would have liked how dirty and nasty I got at Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Like prostatitis, like dirty, 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 butt dirty.
One of my favorite things at the end of the night is like getting home, taking a good shower, going to bed.
I took a shower and Radiohead's great music. So anyway, my second thing's Jurassic Park.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
The very first movie, not the franchise.
Oh my God, yes. Holy shit. Y'all didn't need me to clarify that, right? Just that was Rachel that was Rachel clarifying for the one imaginable person who would assume that when I said that. I don't know if I've talked. I feel like I have very recently talked about Jurassic World and how bummed out it makes me. And it's only in really thinking about how bummed out Jurassic World makes me that I realize just how fucking much I love Jurassic Park.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
It was the first movie I ever saw in theaters. I saw it when I was 6 years old, fell right the fuck to sleep. Because I hadn't really entered my dino stage yet, and the room was really dark, and I didn't really know what to do with that energy. Nobody had really given me a heads up. They mostly really wanted to see Jurassic Park, I guess.
So when all the dinosaurs roared, you just snoozed right through it?
I fell asleep when shit started to break bad. You know, Newman sort of fucks shit up, and then the trucks rolled to a stop and I was like, good time for a nap. And then I woke up and, you know, pterodactyls were flying away from the island. And I was like, oh shit. Whoa. Okay. So now that I'm older though, I can really appreciate how good this movie is and how silly it was that I slept through it. And the reasons that I love it are, I think, like the reasons why I was kind of left cold by Jurassic World, and probably won't end up seeing the new one. What's it called? Fallen Kingdom in theaters. When Spielberg, who directed Jurassic Park, was sort of pitched the idea of adapting the book by Michael Crichton, he sort of saw it as the opportunity to do like a Jaws on land creature feature. But I think it ended up being so much more than that. Like the killer dinosaurs, the T-Rexes and Velociraptors and those little spitty ones, but like the mean dinosaurs, I guess if you want to call them that, they weren't just like horror movie villains, although there were some sequences like, holy shit, that whole sequence in the kitchen with the two velociraptors and the kids is fucking perfect in almost every way that a movie can be perfect. Like
that door handle turns.
The door handle turning, like the cinematography of everything, the pacing of it, and like all the sort of twists and turns that it takes. It like, it hits like those horror movie notes like really, really perfectly. But I don't love it as a horror movie. What I love is that like the humans are indeed in this like dangerous, deadly situation, but the thing that is hunting them is this like humbling, beautiful, like ancient thing. And it is the movie's like reverence for the dinosaurs that I really, really love in Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's a good point.
That first scene where you see the Brontosaurus, or like the whole sequence with like the sick Triceratops that just like instantly like not humanizes, but I guess makes you feel sympathetic for this fake dinosaur. There's just so many scenes about how majestic these things are and how like truly special it is to be around them, juxtaposed with the fact that there are some of them that are going to try and kill you.
That is a really great point, because that tension does not exist in the later movies.
In Jurassic World, there's a scene where 80 pterodactyls fly down into a crowd. One of them picks up a woman and drops it into the mouth of like a dinosaur whale. And the whole time I'm like, what is this accomplishing? Yeah. What is this fucking doing? Jurassic Park, on the other hand, is just like all about these beings of pure majesty, and it accomplishes that largely because the dinosaurs look so fucking good. And I don't know how much you know about like the history of the like special effects used in Jurassic Park.
I don't know anything.
It was like a landmark movie for like CGI in films. It kind of changed everything. It came out and sort of revolutionized how people did.
Still looks pretty good.
And that's the thing. It looks incredible still today.
Yeah.
And the way that it pulls that off is like how it tries to hide the effects as much as they possibly can, how they try to make it blend seamlessly into like the environment. So when they started making this movie, originally the original design for like the special effects for the dinosaurs was going to be all practical. They were going to do like stop motion animation of the dinosaurs, like fucking Jason and the Argonauts, like, but with motion blur, which they accomplished a few ways. One of the ways is by smearing jelly on like a plastic screen and kind of holding that up over everything to hide the transitions. They had also like animatronics, both in like small scale, and then they had what were they called? It was like bigatures, which are like the fucking T-Rex was a huge animatronic T-Rex. And there was a team at Industrial Light and Magic that like had started to do some cursory work with CG and wanted to do it, but nobody at Amblin, who was the production team of the movie, like actually thought they could do it. So there was a team, this like splinter cell at ILM, that started to sort of like work on some proof of concept stuff while they moved ahead and started making the movie in this entirely practical way. And after a while, this team produced a concept of a T-Rex moving in CG. It's like 8 seconds long, and it's just a T-Rex walking in broad daylight, which is fucking kind of wild because that doesn't really happen much in Jurassic Park. And they did a screening of that test with Amblin, and they saw it, and everybody was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So we have to change everything. Not just for this movie, but you know, our entire industry is going to change because of this like 11-second long clip of a dinosaur walking. So there are a couple of reasons why it still looks really, really good today. The first is that they did do a good job of kind of like hiding the CG and not do like a, you know, like the old, the owl at the beginning of Labyrinth. That is not a very good, that owl has not withstood the test of time very well. So they did a better job of sort of like hiding it and making it blend in a little bit better. The other thing they did is they just made the CG look like freakishly, unbelievably good for the first time that like sort of these effects at this scale have been included in a movie. So they didn't just toss out all the stop motion stuff. They repurposed it to like provide data for the CG to like help the animations work. So they had this like really pretty good stop motion animation that had a lot of research that went into it. Like how would this dinosaur move? How would this dinosaur move? The CG team could take that stop motion video and look at it and then say like, okay, here's what the skeleton of the dinosaur should look like because of how they have animated it. Whenever they needed to shoot something that was too complex for CG to animate, they used practical stuff. So on close-ups of the T-Rex, when it gets really, really close to the car and like does the breathing through its nose to fog up the window, that's real. It's not a real dinosaur. It's an animatronic dinosaur. But then they would, you know, then pan out to the full shot of the dinosaur and that CG. And at that point, your mind has been so convinced that it's a real thing. They would also use those bigatures, the huge T-Rex model, for the same purpose. They would film it, you know, fucking up a car, you know, nuzzling into it as it's kind of exploring and spinning it around. And then they can put CG in over that because now they know what it looks like. There are so many clever uses of like hybridizing these two different technologies at what is essentially the passing of the torch from this old school way of doing it to this brand new, like very, very fresh way of doing it that makes this movie like a really interesting kind of junction point in how CG was done. And of course, like after that, a bunch of movies tried to do this too. And they were like, this dude's going to be made out of fucking lasers, and he's going to have 9 heads, each with, like, different faces, and it's like, oh, no, that's going to look like dog shit, dude. Yeah. There was also just, like, a ton of paleontological research that went into, like, how would a T-Rex move?
Yeah.
Not just looking at, like, dino DNA, but also looking at, like, how elephants walk and looking at how, like, giraffes move their necks and shit. Like,
You can feel that when you watch a movie, like, that it's been well-researched.
Yeah, exactly. And the other cool thing that they do that, like, sells everything and is my favorite thing about the movie since I learned this and then watched it is that almost the entire film is shot from a human's perspective, almost the whole film. So like the scene where they pull up in the car and they see the brontosaurus, you see just like the bottom half of the body of the brontosaurus, and that's all that's in frame before you get like the bigger shot. The T-Rex chasing Dr. Ian Malcolm away as he's like holding the flare trying to get him away from the kids. That is shot from Ian Malcolm's perspective. So the dinosaur looks fucking gargantuan.
I never thought about that. That's
it's
smart.
Really, really, really incredible. I don't know. It is a fucking perfect movie. There are so many things about it that are so like ahead of its time. And the fact that it did CG and sort of introduced it to like, hey, you can make movies this way. And then for, I don't know, man, 8 years afterwards, nobody was able to match it.
Yeah, it's true.
It's kind of incredible. Mm-hmm. And it was the only Jurassic Park movie they ever made. They made that. They made
good
it.
Thing they stopped on that high note.
They made it. I don't know. I haven't seen Lost World or was 3 Lost World? Which one had Vince Vaughn in it? I don't know. Anyway, the first one's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I think it's on Netflix right now, too.
The original JP?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's watch that tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's get Henry like early into the dino
Ooh,
phase.
You don't think it'll be a little scary?
It's not that scary.
A big T-Rex.
Only thing that ever happened.
Killing that goat.
That's fine. The only thing that ever scared me in a Jurassic Park movie is when Richard Schiff got all ate up.
Oh.
Oh, Richard Schiff.
In the bathroom, too.
Toby. Come on.
That's got to, like, combine a couple of your fears right there.
That's probably why it scared me so bad is because Toby Ziegler did get ate by the big T-Rex.
Like, having somebody walk on...
Oh, but it's not just like somebody like barging in like, oh, excuse me, and then walking right back out. It's a big dinosaur that eats half my body. Shoot. Hey, do you want to hear some submissions from our friends?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Maddie says, even though they are a lot of work, garage sales are wonderful. Seeing your old treasures find new homes at any price always makes me happy. You got any fond garage sale memory? Did your family ever do a garage sale when you were younger?
I don't know that we ever held one, but I have been to a huge number of them.
Oh, for sure. We held one because we had, you know, my parents had like so many kids and we had just a bunch of shit. I remember very distinctly, we just gotten the Super Nintendo. And so we garage sailed our NES, the original Nintendo, and like all our games for it for probably $15.
No, gosh.
And now I look back at that like, fuck. There was a lot of stuff that we did not get a very good price on. I remember playing the Batman NES game in like the living room and somebody came in and was like, okay, that's mine now. And I was like, okay, good luck. Sucks. I got the Super Nintendo now. And then like, you know, 20 years later, I was like, oh no, I want all that back ironically. Bethany says, I love when a silly movie trope happens in real life. For instance, when my toaster pops the finished toast up, it really hops out of there and catches air. Someday I'm going to grab it midair and I can't wait. So satisfying.
That's great.
I included this one because it's aspirational. I want to know, Bethany, if you ever do get it. And I don't want you to stand. I feel like it's cheating if you stand over the toaster and wait.
Oh, you have to just like walk by and grab it.
I want you to have like... put it in, go upstairs, get your JanSport, throw your books in it, come downstairs, and as you're walking out the front door, just like, ba-doing, snatch, chomp.
That's really good.
That's so fucking good. If you can skateboard by, like, just slowly building up speed as you work your way out to the street and grind down your steps of your house out to the front yard.
Just in time to see the bus fly by.
But you skitch while eating this toast, and, like, kids are in the backseat, like, looking at you, like, making... like a guitar, like air guitar. And you're like, yeah, dude, I caught this morning. And they're like, no fucking way. And you're like, yeah, I caught it. So do all that. Here's one from Greg who says, my wonder is the feeling of stretching after a long drive. I recently drove a moving truck from Michigan to Florida. Fuck, Greg. Wow, dude.
That's rough.
From Michigan to Florida, and there was no better feeling than stretching your legs at the end of the day. I hope you took breaks. I hope it was not just one long go of it. I hope that you took breaks. I hope there were breaks, because that's a long haul. What's the longest car drive you ever did?
I mean, I've done Missouri to Texas.
Yeah.
Which is pretty long. It's like 14, 16 hours, something like that.
I did Chicago to Texas. I don't know what's longer, that or Huntington to Boston, because I did that one too. That one was a roughie. So this has been wonderful. This is the podcast you heard. I am so grateful for all of you to listen to the show. I don't know when this one's going up. I don't know if we're going to put this one up on the 4th of July. Because I don't think anybody would listen to it. Is that weird? Like, can you imagine people at their barbecue, like, you know, eating hot dogs with their uncle or something? And they're like
holding their sparklers.
And they're like, I also like volunteering at festivals. Turn this shit up. This is my jam. Pass the ox. Pass the ox, dude. Yeah. Got a podcast about chill swimming.
To your grilling time playlist.
Oh, I think that shit's public. I'm going to read the link that you, letter for letter, unless it's very long.
Some folks shared it in the Facebook group.
Okay, but just in case you want to grab it and you're sitting at your computer right now and you want to grab grilling time for your 4th of July party or what have you, you're going to be able to find that by going into your web browser and where the fuck is it? I've stolen as long as I can. You're going to, oh God, no, it's so long. Fuck that. It is the longest link ever. If you just search grilling time in Spotify, I bet it'll show up.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, people have been able to find it somehow.
Yeah, so thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. You can go to MaximumFun.org and check out all the great shows there. Shows like Stop Podcasting Yourself and Switchblade Sisters and Story Break.
Minority Corner.
All of your favorite shows or your new favorite shows if you haven't listened to them.
Heat Rocks
is going to be your favorite fucking show. And all of that is at MaximumFun.org, and we have other shows at McElroyShows.com. And thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode descriptions. And I don't know, man, let's just go slam some sparkle dogs and get on it. You know what I mean?
It's a grand old flag. It's a flag that it flags, and when it flags, you know that it flags.
I'm gonna bump you up a little bit, but keep going. I'm just gonna ride the dial a little bit and get the good levels.
And when it flags, it keeps flagging, and flags and flags and flags and flags.
Yeah.
Every heart beats true for the red, white, and blue.
It's the best part.
And the flags they raise still.
Is it disrespectful to not know the words to this song?
They raise.
There were like 9 more flags in there that you left out.
I got part of it right, though. Did you hear that?
Yeah, the red, white, and blue part. That was good. So we'll see you next week. Money won't pay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Welcome everyone to the live wrestling spectacular in Los Angeles.
So far, the world's most boring wrestling podcast has been destroying the competition.
Isn't there anyone who can save us from this travesty?
Wait, could it be?
It's Tights and Fights, the perfect wrestling podcast.
Tights and Fights is here to save us from the monotony of boring wrestling podcasts with hilarious conversations,
woke trips through the history of wrestling,
and joke about the finer points of people wearing spandex.
What a match!
And the Tights and Fights podcast will be back every week.
Thursdays on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Please, these hosts have families. Tights and Fights.
Podcast. Dice and Fights.